Barry's voice had returned to normal. He smiled contentedly, like he could think of no better way to spend his day than flying back and forth from Cape Cod, helping his friends, and channeling the voices of otherworldly ninjas. Amir, Hearth, and I shook our heads vehemently. "No questions," I said. "Not a single one." I locked eyes with Sam. She gave me a shrug and a headshake like, "Yes, I heard. My co-pilot was briefly possessed. What do you want me to do about it?" "Okay, then," Barry patted Blitzen's granite noggin. "Headsets are in the compartments next to you if you want to talk to us in the cockpit. It's a very short flight to Norwood Memorial. Sit back and enjoy." Enjoy was not the word I would have used. Small confession. Not only had I never flown in a Citation XLS, I had never flown in an airplane. My first time probably should not have been in an 8-seat Cessna flown by a girl my age who'd only been taking lessons for a few months. That wasn't Sam's fault. I had nothing to compare it to, but the takeoff seemed smooth. At least we got airborne without any fatalities. Still, my fingernails left permanent gouges in the armrests. Every bump of turbulence jolted me so badly, I felt nostalgic for our old friend Stanley, the canyon-diving 8-legged flying horse. Well, almost. Amir declined to use a headset, maybe because his brain was already overloaded with crazy Norse information. He sat with his arms crossed, staring morosely out the window, as if wondering whether we would ever land in the real world again. Sam's voice crackled in my headphones. "We've reached cruising altitude. 32 minutes left in flight." "Everything good up there?" I asked. "Yeah," the connection beeped. "There, no one else is on this channel. Our friend seems okay now. Anyway, there's no need to worry. I've got the controls."
"Who, me? Worry?"
From what I could see, Barry seemed pretty chill at the moment. He was kicking back in the co-pilot seat, staring at his iPad. I wanted to believe he was keeping an eye on important aviation readings, but I was pretty sure he was playing Candy Crush. "Any thoughts?" I asked Sam. "I mean, about Goat Killer's advice?" Static. Then, "He said we should seek him out in Jotunheim. So he's a giant. That doesn't necessarily mean he's bad. My father..." She hesitated, probably trying to get the word sour taste out of her mouth. "He has lots of enemies. Whoever Goat Killer is, he's got some powerful magic. He was right about Provincetown. We should listen to him. I should have listened sooner." "Don't do that," I said. "Don't beat yourself up." Amir tried to focus on me.
"Sorry, what?"
"Not you, man," I tapped the headset mic, talking to Sam. Amir mouthed the silent, "Ah." He returned to practicing his forlorn stare out the window.
"Amir isn't on this channel," Sam asked.
"No. After I drop you guys, I'm going to take the Skofnung sword to Valhalla for safekeeping. I can't take Amir into the hotel, but I'm going to try to show him what I can. Show him my life."
"Good call. He's strong, Sam. He can handle it."
A 3-second count of white noise.
"I hope you're right. I'll also update the gang on Floor 19.
"What about Alex Fierro?"
Sam glanced back at me. It was weird seeing her a few feet away, but hearing her voice right in my ears.
"Bringing her along is a bad idea, Magnus. You saw what Loki could do to me. Imagine what he..."
I could imagine, but I also sensed that Goat Killer had a point. We would need Alex Fierro. Her arrival in Valhalla wasn't a coincidence. The Norns, or some other weird prophecy gods, had interwoven her fate with ours.
"I don't think we should underestimate her," I said, remembering her fighting those wolves and riding a bucking lindworm.
"Also, I trust her. I mean, as much as you can trust somebody who has cut your head off. Do you have any idea how to find the god Heimdall?" The static sounded heavier, angrier.
"Unfortunately, yes," Sam said. "Get ready. We're almost in position."
"For landing in Norwood? I thought you said we were going to Alfheim."
"You are. I'm not. The flight path to Norwood puts us just over the optimal drop zone."
"Drop zone?" I really hoped I had misheard her.
"Look, I have to concentrate on flying this plane. Ask Hearthstone." My headphones went silent.
Hearthstone was having a staring contest with Blitzen. The dwarf's granite face poked out from his bubble-wrapped cocoon, his expression frozen in dying agony. Hearthstone didn't look much happier. The misery swirling around him was almost as easy to see as his blood-stained, polka-dotted scarf.
"Alfheim," I signed. "How do we get there?"
"Jump," Hearth told me. My stomach dropped out from under me.
"Jump? Jump out of the plane?"
Hearth stared past me, the way he does when he's considering how to explain something complicated in sign language. Usually something I won't like.
"Alfheim, Kingdom of Air, Light," he signed. "Can only be entered..."
he pantomimed free-falling. "This is a jet plane," I said. "We can't jump, we'll die."
"Not die," Harth promised. "Also, not jump exactly, just..."
He made a poof gesture, which did not reassure me. "We cannot die until we save Blitzen."
For a guy who rarely made a sound, Hearthstone could speak in defiant shouts when he wanted to. He'd just given me my marching orders. Poof out of this plane, fall to Alfheim, save Blitzen. Only after that would it be okay for me to die.
Amir shifted in his seat. "Magnus? You look nervous."
"Yeah." I was tempted to make up some simple explanation, something that wouldn't add any more cracks to Amir's generous mortal brain. But we were beyond that now. Amir was fully in Sam's life, for better or worse, normal or abnormal. He'd always been kind to me. He'd fed me when I was homeless, treated me like a person when most people pretended I was invisible. He'd come to our rescue today without knowing any details, just because Sam was in trouble. I couldn't lie to him.
"Apparently, Harth and I are going to go poof."
I told him my marching orders. Amir looked so lost I wanted to give the guy a hug.
"Until last week," he said, "my biggest worry was where to expand our falafel franchise. Jamaica Plain or Chestnut Hill. Now I'm not even sure what world we're flying through."
I checked to make sure my headset mic was switched off. "Amir, Sam is the same as she's always been. She's brave. She's strong.
I know that."
"She's also head over heels crazy about you," I said. "She didn't ask for any of this weirdness in her life. Her biggest concern is that it doesn't mess up her future with you. Believe that." He hung his head like a puppy in a kennel.
"I'm trying, Magnus. It's just so strange."
"Yeah," I said. "Here's a heads up. It's going to get stranger." I switched on my microphone. "Sam?"
"I could hear that entire conversation," she announced.
"Ah." Apparently I hadn't figured out the headset controls after all.
"I'll kill you later," she said. "Right now, your exit is coming up."
"Wait, won't Barry notice if we just disappear?"
"He's mortal. His brain will recalibrate. After all, people don't just vanish off jet planes in mid-flight. By the time we land in Norwood, he probably won't even remember you were here."
I wanted to think I was a little more memorable than that, but I was too nervous to worry about it.
Next to me, Hearthstone unlatched his seatbelt. He pulled off his scarf and tied it around Blitzen, fashioning a sort of makeshift harness.
"Good luck," Sam told me. "I'll see you back in Midgard, assuming, you know."
Assuming we live, I thought. Assuming we can heal Blitzen. Assuming our luck is better than it has been the past 2 days. Or ever.
Between one heartbeat and the next, the Cessna disappeared. I found myself floating in the sky, my headphones plugged into nothing at all. Then I fell.
Chapter 21. Loiterers will be shot, then arrested, and shot again. Blitzen once told me that dwarves never left home without a parachute. Now I understood the wisdom in that. Hearthstone and I plummeted through the frigid air, me waving my arms and screaming, Harth in a perfect swan dive with granite Blitzen tied to his back. Harth glanced over at me reassuringly, as if to say, "Don't worry, the dwarf is bubble-wrapped." My only response was more incoherent screaming because I didn't know the ASL for HOLY FREAKING AH! We punched through a cloud and everything changed. Our fall slowed, the air turned warm and sweet, the sunlight intensified, blinding me. We hit the ground. Well, sort of. My feet touched down on freshly mown grass, and I bounced right off, feeling like I weighed about 20 pounds. I astronaut skipped across the lawn until I found my balance. I squinted through the searing sunlight, trying to get my bearings. Acres of landscaping, tall trees, a big house in the distance. Everything seemed haloed in fire. No matter which direction I turned, I felt as though a spotlight was shining straight in my face. Hearthstone grabbed my arm. He pressed something into my hands, a pair of dark sunglasses. I put them on and the stabbing pain in my eyes subsided.
"Thanks," I muttered.
"Is it this bright all the time?"
Hearthstone frowned. I must have been slurring my words. He was having trouble reading my lips. I repeated the question in sign language.
"Always bright," Harth agreed. "You get used to it."
He scanned our surroundings as if looking for threats. We landed on the front lawn of a big estate. Low stone walls hedged the property, a golf course-sized expanse of well-kept flower beds and thin, willowy trees that looked as if they'd been pulled upward by gravity as they grew. The house was a Tudor-style mansion with leaded glass windows and conical turrets.
"Who lives here?" I signed to Harth. "President of Alfheim?"
"Just a family. The Makepieces." He spelled out their name.
"They must be important," I signed.
Harth shrugged. "Regular. Middle class." I laughed, then realized he wasn't joking. If this was a middle-class family in Alfheim, I didn't want to split a lunch tab with the one percenters.
"We should go," Harth signed. "Makepieces don't like me."
He readjusted his scarf harness for Blitzen, who probably weighed no more than a regular backpack in Alfheim. Together we headed for the road. I have to admit, the lighter gravity made me feel, well, lighter. I bounded along, covering 5 feet with every step. I had to restrain myself from leaping farther. With my inherited strength, if I wasn't careful, I might have found myself jumping over the rooftops of middle-class mansions. As far as I could tell, Alfheim was just row after row of estates like the Makepieces, each property at least several acres, each lawn dotted with flower beds and topiaries. In the cobblestone driveways, black luxury SUVs gleamed. The air smelled like baked hibiscus and crisp dollar bills. Sam had said our flight path to Norwood would put us over the best drop zone. Now that made sense. In the same way Nidavellir resembled Southie, Alfheim reminded me of the posh suburbs west of Boston. Wellesley, maybe, with its huge houses and pastoral landscapes, its winding roads, picturesque creeks, and sleepy aura of absolute safety. Assuming you belong there. On the downside, the sunlight was so harsh it accentuated every imperfection. Even one stray leaf or wilted flower in a garden stood out as a glaring problem. My own clothes looked dirtier. I could see every pore on the back of my hands and the veins under my skin. I also understood what Hearthstone meant about Alfheim being made of air and light. The whole place seemed unreal, like it was whisked together from cotton candy fibers and might dissolve with a splash of water. Walking across the spongy ground, I felt uneasy and impatient. The super dark sunglasses only did so much to alleviate my headache. After a few blocks, I signed to Hearthstone, "Where are we going?" He pursed his lips.
"Home."
I caught his arm and made him stop.
"Your home?" I signed. "Where you grew up?"
Harth stared at the nearest quaint garden wall. Unlike me, he wore no sunglasses. In the brilliant daylight, his eyes glittered like crystal formations.
"Skofnung Stone is at home," he signed, "with father."
The sign for father was an open hand, palm facing out, thumb across the forehead. It reminded me of L for loser. Given what I knew about Harth's childhood, that seemed appropriate. Once, in Jotunheim, I'd done some healing magic on Harth. I'd gotten a glimpse of the pain he carried around inside. He'd been mistreated and shamed while growing up, mostly because of his deafness. Then his brother had died. I didn't know the details, and his parents had blamed Harth. He couldn't possibly want to go back to a home like that. I remembered how strongly Blitzen had protested the idea, even when he knew he was going to die.
"Don't make Harth go. Not worth it, kid."
Yet here we were.
"Why?"
I signed. "Why would your father, loser, have the Skofnung Stone?" Instead of answering, Hearthstone nodded in the direction we'd come. Everything was so bright in Elfworld, I hadn't noticed the flashing lights until the sleek, black town car pulled up directly behind us. Along the sedan's front grille, red and blue sequencers pulsed. Behind the windshield, two elves in business suits scowled at us. The Alfheim Police Department had come to say hello.
"Can we help you?" asked the first cop. Right then I knew we were in trouble. In my experience, no cop ever said, "Can we help you?" if he had any actual desire to help. Another giveaway? Cop number one's hand was resting on the butt of his sidearm. Cop number two edged around the passenger side, also looking ready to break out some helpful deadly force. Both elves were dressed like plainclothes detectives, in dark suits and silk ties, with ID badges clipped to their belts. Their short-cropped hair was as blonde as Hearthstone's. They had the same sort of pale eyes and eerily calm expressions. Otherwise, they looked nothing like my friend. The cops seemed taller, spindlier, more alien. They exuded a cold air of disdain, as though they had personal AC units installed under their shirt collars. The other thing I found strange, they spoke. I'd spent so much time around Hearthstone, who communicated in eloquent silence, that hearing an elf speak was really jarring. It just seemed wrong. Both cops focused on Hearthstone. They looked right through me as if I didn't exist.
"I asked you a question, pal,"
the first cop said. Is there a problem here?
Hearthstone shook his head. He edged back, but I caught his arm. Retreating would only make things worse.
We're good, I said. Thanks, officers. The detective stared at me like I was from another world, which, to be fair, I was.
The ID tag on cop number one's belt read, Sunspot.
He didn't look much like a sunspot. Then again, I guess I didn't look like much of a chase.
Cop number two's ID read, Wildflower.
With a handle like that, I wanted him to be wearing a Hawaiian shirt or at least a floral pattern tie, but his outfit was just as boring as his partner's.
Sunspot wrinkled his nose as if I smelled like a white sparrow.
Where'd you learn Elfish, Thick? That accent is horrible.
Thick? I asked.
Wildflower smirked at his partner.
What do you bet Elfish isn't his first language? Illegal hoose fader would be my guess.
I wanted to point out that I was a human speaking English, and it was my first language. Also, my only language. Elfish and English just happened to be the same, like Hearth's Alf Sign Language was the same as American Sign Language. I doubted the cops would listen or care. The way they spoke was a little strange to my ears, a sort of old-fashioned, aristocratic American accent I'd heard on newsreels and movies from the 1930s.
Look, guys, I said, we're just taking a walk.
In a nice neighborhood, said Sunspot, where I'm guessing you don't live. The makepiece is down the road. They called in a report. Somebody trespassing, loitering. We take that sort of thing seriously, Thick.
I had to tamp down my anger. As a homeless person, I'd been a frequent target for rough treatment by law enforcement. My darker-skinned friends got it even worse. So, during the 2 years I lived on the street, I learned a whole new level of caution when dealing with friendly neighborhood police officers. And yet, I didn't like being called a thick, whatever that was.
Officers, I said, we've been walking for maybe 5 minutes. We're heading to my friend's house. How is that loitering?
Hearthstone signed to me, careful.
Sunspot frowned.
What was that? Some kind of gang sign? Speak Elfish!
He's deaf, I said.
Deaf?
Wildflower's face scrunched up in disgust.
What kind of elf?
Whoa, partner. Sunspot swallowed. He tugged at his collar like his personal AC had stopped working.
Is that... That's gotta be... You know, Mr. Alderman's kid.
Wildflower's expression shifted from contempt to fear. It would have been kind of satisfying to watch, except that a fearful cop was way more dangerous than a disgusted one.
Mr. Hearthstone? Wildflower asked. Is that you?
Hearthstone nodded glumly.
Sunspot cursed.
All right, both of you in the car.
Whoa, why? I demanded. If you're arresting us, I want to know the charges.
We're not arresting you, Thick, Sunspot growled. We're taking you to see Mr. Alderman.
After that, Wildflower added, you won't be our problem anymore. His tone made it sound like we'd be no one's problem, since we'd be buried under a lovely, well-tended flower bed somewhere. The last thing I wanted to do was get in the car, but the cops tapped their fingers on their elfish firearms, showing us just how helpful they were prepared to be. I climbed into the back of the cruiser. Chapter 22. Pretty sure Hearthstone's dad is a cow-abducting alien. It was the nicest cop car I'd ever been in, and I'd been in quite a few. The black leather interior smelled of vanilla. The plexiglass divider was squeaky clean. The bench seat had a massage feature so I could relax after a hard day of loitering. Obviously, they served only the finest criminals here in Alfheim. After a mile of comfortable cruising, we pulled off the main road and stopped at a pair of iron gates monogrammed with a fancy A. On either side, 10-foot-tall stone walls were topped with decorative spikes to keep out the upper-middle-class riffraff who lived down the street. From the tops of the gateposts, security cameras swiveled to study us. The gates opened. As we drove through into Hearthstone's family estate, my jaw nearly dropped off. I thought my family mansion was embarrassing. The front yard was bigger than the Boston Common. Swans glided across a lake edged with willow trees. We drove over 2 different bridges crossing a winding creek, past 4 different gardens, then through a second set of gates before coming to the main house, which looked like a postmodern version of Sleeping Beauty Castle at Disneyland. White and gray slab walls jutting out at strange angles, slender towers like organ pipes, huge plate glass windows, and a burnished steel front door so large it probably had to be opened by chain-pulling trolls. Hearthstone fidgeted with his bag of runes, occasionally glancing back toward the car's trunk, where the cops had stowed Blitzen.
The officer said nothing until we parked at the front door.
Out, Wildflower said.
As soon as Hearthstone was free, he walked to the back of the cruiser and rapped on the trunk.
Yeah, fine, Sunspot popped the lid. Though I don't see why you care. That has to be the ugliest dwarf lawn ornament I've ever seen.
Hearthstone gently lifted out Blitzen and slung the granite dwarf over his shoulder. Wildflower shoved me toward the entrance.
Move, Thick.
Hey! I almost reached for my pendant, but caught myself. At least the cops now treated Hearthstone as off-limits, but they still seemed perfectly fine pushing me around.
Whatever Thick means, I said, I'm not it.
Wildflower snorted.
Have you looked in the mirror recently?
It dawned on me that, compared to elves, all willowy and delicate and handsome, I must have looked squat and clumsy. Thick. I got the feeling the term also implied mentally slow, because why insult someone on one level when you can insult them on two? I was tempted to wreak my revenge on the police officers by bringing out Jack to sing some top 40 hits. Before I could, Hearthstone took my arm and led me up the front steps. The cops trailed behind us, putting distance between themselves and Hearthstone as if they feared his deafness might be contagious. When we reached the top step, the big steel door swung open silently. A young woman hurried out to meet us. She was almost as short as Blitzen, though she had blonde hair and delicate features like an elf. Judging from her plain linen dress and white hair bonnet, I assumed she was a house servant.
Hearth!
Her eyes lit up in excitement, but she quickly stifled her enthusiasm when she saw our police escorts.
Mr. Hearthstone, I mean.
Hearth blinked like he might start crying. He signed, hello/sorry, blending them together in a single word. Officer Wildflower cleared his throat.
Is your master home, Inga?
Oh,
Inga gulped. She looked at Hearthstone, then back at the cups.
Yes, sir, but...
Go get him, snapped Sunspot.
Inga turned and fled inside. As she hurried away, I noticed something hanging from the back of her skirt. A cord of brown and white fur, frayed at the end like the tassel of a belt. Then the tassel flicked, and I realized it was a living appendage.
She's got a cowtail, I blurted.
Sunspot laughed.
Well, she's a holder. It would be illegal for her to hide that tail. We'd have to bring her in on charges of impersonating a proper elf.
The cop gave Hearthstone a quick look of distaste, making it clear that his definition of proper elf also did not include my friend. Wildflower grinned.
I don't think the boy has ever seen a holder before, Sunspot. What's the matter, Thick? They don't have domesticated forest sprites in whatever world you crawled out of?
I didn't answer, though in my mind I was imagining Jack belting out Selena Gomez right in the policeman's ears. The thought comforted me. I stared into the foyer, a sunlit colonnade of white stone and glass skylights that still managed to make me feel claustrophobic. I wondered how Inga felt about being required to display her tail at all times. Was it a source of pride to show her identity, or did it feel like punishment, a constant reminder of her lesser status? I decided the really horrible thing was entwining the two together. Show us who you are, now feel bad about it. Not much different from Hearth signing hello and sorry as a single word. I felt Mr. Alderman's presence before I saw him. The air turned cooler and carried a scent of spearmint. Hearthstone's shoulders slumped as if Midgar gravity were taking over. He shifted Blitzen to the middle of his back as if to hide him. The spots on Hearth's scarf seemed to swarm. Then I realized Hearth was shivering. Footsteps echoed on the marble floor. Mr. Alderman appeared, rounding one of the columns and marching toward us. All four of us stepped back. Hearth, me, even the cops. Mr. Alderman was almost 7 feet tall, and so thin that he looked like one of those UFO-flying, strange medical experiment-conducting aliens from Roswell. His eyes were too large, his fingers were too delicate, his jaw was so pointy I wondered if his face had been hung on a perfect isosceles triangle. He dressed better than your average UFO traveler, though. His gray suit fit perfectly over a green turtleneck that made his neck look even longer. His platinum blonde hair bristled like Hearth's. I could see some family resemblance in the nose and the mouth, but Mr. Alderman's face was much more expressive. He looked harsh, critical, dissatisfied, like someone who just had an outrageously expensive, terrible meal and was contemplating the one-star review he was going to write.
Well, his eyes dug into his son's face, you're back. At least you had enough sense to bring the son of Frey with you.
Sunspot choked on his own smug smile.
Sorry, sir, who?
This lad. Mr. Alderman pointed to me. Magnus Chase, son of Frey, isn't it?
That's me,
I bit back the urge to add, sir. So far, this dude hadn't earned it. I wasn't used to people looking impressed when they found out my dad was Frey. Reactions normally ranged from, gee, I'm sorry, to, who is Frey, to hysterical laughter. So I'm not gonna lie. I appreciated how quickly the cop's expressions changed from contempt to, oh poop, we just dissed a demigod. I didn't understand it, but I liked it. We didn't know. Wildflower brushed a speck off my shirt like that would make everything better. Thank you, officers, Mr. Alderman cut in. I will take it from here. Sunspot gaped at me like he wanted to apologize, or possibly offer me a coupon for 50% off my next imprisonment. You heard the man, I said. Off you go, Officers Sunspot and Wildflower, and don't worry, I'll remember you. They bowed to me, actually bowed, then made a hasty retreat to their vehicle. Mr. Alderman scrutinized Hearthstone as if looking for visible defects. You're the same, he pronounced sourly. At least the dwarf has turned to stone. That's an improvement. Hearthstone clenched his jaw. He signed in short, angry bursts. His name is B-L-I-T-Z-E-N. Stop, Alderman demanded. None of that ridiculous hand-waving. Come inside. He gave me the sub-zero once-over. We must properly welcome our guest. Chapter 23. Yep, his other car is definitely a UFO. We were shown into the living room where absolutely nothing was living. Lights spilled in from huge picture windows. The 30-foot ceiling glittered with a silver mosaic of swirling clouds. The polished marble floor was blindingly white. Lining the walls, illuminated niches displayed various minerals, stones, and fossils. All around the room, yet more artifacts sat under glass cases on white podiums. As far as museums went, yeah, great space. As far as rooms where I wanted to hang out, no thanks. The only places to sit were two long wooden benches on either side of a steel coffee table. Above the mantle of the cold fireplace, a giant oil portrait of a young boy smiled down at me. He didn't look like Hearthstone. His dead brother, Anderon, I guessed. The boy's white suit and beaming face made him look like an angel. I wondered if Hearthstone had ever looked that happy as a child. I doubted it. The smiling elf boy was the only joyful thing in this room, and the smiling elf boy was dead, frozen in time like the other artifacts. I was tempted to sit on the floor instead of the benches. I decided to try politeness. It hardly ever works for me, but once in a while I give it a shot. Hearthstone put Blitzen down carefully on the floor. Then he sat next to me. Mr. Alderman made himself uncomfortable on the bench across from us. Inga, he called. Refreshments! The Hulder materialized in a nearby doorway. Right away, sir. She scurried off again, her cowtail swishing in the folds of her skirt. Mr. Alderman fixed Hearthstone with a withering stare, or maybe it was his normal, wow, I missed you expression. Your room is as you left it. I assume you will be staying. Hearthstone shook his head. We need your help. Then we will leave. Use the slate, son. Mr. Alderman gestured at the end table next to Hearth, where a small whiteboard sat with a marker attached by a string. The old elf glanced at me. The slate encourages him to think before he speaks, if you can call that hand-waving speech. Hearthstone crossed his arms and glared at his father. I decided to play translator before one of them killed the other. Mr. Alderman, Hearth and I need your help. Our friend Blitzen has turned to stone, said Mr. Alderman. Yes, I can see that. Fresh running water will bring back a petrified dwarf. I don't see the issue. That information alone would have made the unpleasant trip to Alfheim worth it. I felt like the weight of a granite dwarf had been lifted from my shoulders. Unfortunately, we needed more. But see, I said, I turned Blitzen to stone on purpose. He was wounded by a sword. The Skofnung sword. Mr. Alderman's mouth twitched. Skofnung. Yeah, is that funny? Alderman showed his perfect white teeth. You've come here for my help, to heal this dwarf. You want the Skofnung stone. Yeah, you have it? Oh, certainly, Mr. Alderman gestured to one of the nearby podiums. Under a glass case sat a stone disc about the size of a dessert plate, gray with blue flecks, just as Loki had described. I collect artifacts from all the nine worlds, said Mr. Alderman. The Skofnung stone was one of my first acquisitions. It was specially enchanted to withstand the magical edge of the sword, to sharpen it, if necessary, and, of course, to provide an instant remedy in the event some foolish wielder cut himself.
That's great, I said. How do you heal with it?
Alderman chuckled.
Quite simple. You touch the stone to the wound, and the wound closes.
So, can we borrow it?
No.
Why was I not surprised? Hearthstone gave me a look like, yes, Nine World's best dad.
Inga returned with 3 silver goblets on a tray. After serving Mr. Alderman, she set a cup in front of me, then she smiled at Hearthstone and gave him his.
When their fingers touched, Inga's ears turned bright red. She hurried off back to wherever she was required to stay, out of sight but within shouting distance. The liquid in my cup looked like melted gold. I hadn't eaten or drunk anything since breakfast, so I've been kind of hoping for elfish sandwiches and sparkling water. I wondered if I was supposed to ask about the goblet's creation and its famous deeds before I drank, the way I would in Nidavellir, the world of the dwarves. Something told me no. The dwarves treated every object they made as unique, deserving of a name. From what I had seen so far, elves surrounded themselves with priceless artifacts and didn't care about them any more than they cared about their servants. I doubted they named their goblets. I took a sip. Without doubt, it was the best stuff I'd ever had, with the sweetness of honey, the richness of chocolate, and the coolness of glacier ice. Yet it tasted unlike any of those. It filled my stomach more satisfyingly than a 3-course meal. It completely quenched my thirst. The jolt it gave me made the mead of Valhalla seem like a knockoff brand of energy drink. Suddenly, the living room was tinged with kaleidoscopic light. I gazed outside at the well-manicured lawn, the sculptured hedgerows, the garden topiaries. I wanted to pull off my sunglasses, break through the window, and go skipping merrily through Alfheim until the sun burned my eyes out. I realized Mr. Alderman was watching me, waiting to see how I handled the elfish goofy juice. I blinked several times to get my thoughts back in order.
"Sir," I said, because politeness was working so well,
"why won't you help us? I mean, the stone is right there."
"I will not help you," said Mr. Alderman, "because it would serve me no purpose." He sipped his drink, raising his pinky finger to show off a glittering amethyst ring. "My son, Hearthstone, deserves no help from me. He left years ago without a word." He paused and barked a laugh.
"Without a word?"
"Well, of course he did, but you take my meaning." I wanted to shove my goblet between his perfect teeth, but I restrained myself.
"So Hearthstone left. Is that a crime?"
"It should be," Alderman scowled. "In doing so, he killed his mother."
Hearthstone choked and dropped his goblet. For a moment, the only sound was the cup rolling on the marble floor.
"You didn't know?" Mr. Alderman asked.
"Of course you didn't. Why would you care? After you left, she was distracted and upset. You have no idea how you embarrassed us by disappearing. There were rumors about you studying rune magic, of all things, consorting with Mimir and his riffraff, befriending a dwarf. Well, one afternoon, your mother was crossing the street in the village on her way back from the country club. She had endured awful comments from her friends at lunch. She feared her reputation was ruined. She wasn't looking where she was going when a delivery truck ran the red light." Alderman gazed at the mosaic ceiling. For a second, I could almost imagine he had emotions other than anger. I thought I detected sadness in his eyes. Then his gaze froze over with disapproval again. "As if causing your brother's death hadn't been bad enough." Hearthstone fumbled for his goblet. His fingers seemed to be made of clay. It took him 3 tries to stand the cup upright on the table. Spots of gold liquid made a trail across the back of his hand.
"Hearth," I touched his arm. I signed, "I'm here."
I couldn't think of what else to say. I wanted him to know he wasn't alone, that someone in this room cared for him. I thought about the runestone he'd shown me months ago. Perthrow, the sign of the empty cup, Hearth's favorite symbol. Hearthstone had been drained by his childhood. He'd chosen to fill his life with rune magic and a new family, which included me. I wanted to yell at Mr. Alderman that Hearthstone was a better elf than his parents ever were. But one thing I'd learned from being a son of Frey, I couldn't always fight my friends' battles. The best I could do was be there to heal their injuries. Also, yelling at Mr. Alderman wouldn't get us what we needed. Sure, I could summon Jack, bust into the display case, and just take the stone. But I was betting Mr. Alderman had some first-rate security. It wouldn't do Blitzen any good to get healed, only to be killed immediately by the Alfheim SWAT unit. I wasn't even sure the stone would work properly if it wasn't given freely by its owner. Magic items had weird rules, especially ones named Skofnung.
"Mr. Alderman," I tried to keep my voice even, "what do you want?" He raised a platinum blonde eyebrow.
Excuse me?
Aside from making your son feel miserable, I added. You're really good at that. But you said helping us wouldn't serve a purpose for you. What would make it worth your while? He smiled faintly.
Ah, a young man who understands business.
From you, Magnus Chase, I don't require much. You know the Vanir are our ancestral gods? Frey himself is our patron and lord. All of Alfheim was given to him as his teething gift when he was a child.
So, he chewed on you and spit you out?
Mr. Alderman's smile died. My point is that a son of Frey would make a worthy friend for our family. All I would ask is that you stay with us for a while, perhaps attend a small reception. Just a few hundred close associates. Show yourself, take a few photos with me for the press, that sort of thing. The gold drink started to leave a bad aftertaste in my mouth. Photos with Alderman sounded almost as painful as getting decapitated by a wire. You're worried about your reputation, I said. You're ashamed of your son, so you want me to bolster your street cred. Alderman's big alien eyes narrowed, making them almost normal size.
I do not know this term, street cred, but I believe we understand each other.
Oh, I understand you. I glanced at Hearthstone for guidance, but he still looked unfocused, miserable. So, Mr. Alderman, I do your little photo op, and you give us the stone?
Well, now, Alderman took a long sip from his goblet.
I would expect something from my wayward son as well. He has unfinished business here. He must atone. He must pay his were-guild.
What's a were-guild?
I silently prayed it wasn't like a werewolf.
Hearthstone knows what I mean.
Alderman stared at his son.
Not a hair must show. You do it must be done, what you should have done years ago. While you work on that, your friend will be a guest in our house.
Wait, I said. How long are we talking about? We've got somewhere important to be in, like, less than 4 days. Mr. Alderman bared his white teeth again.
Well then, Hearthstone had better hurry, he rose and shouted. Inga!
The Huldir scurried over, a dish rag in her hands.
Provide for my son and his guest as needed, said Mr. Alderman. They will stay in Hearthstone's old room. And Magnus Chase, do not think you can defy me. My house, my rules. Try to take the stone, and son of Frey or not, it won't go well for you.
He tossed his goblet on the floor as if he couldn't allow Hearthstone to have the most impressive spill. Clean that up, he snapped at Inga. Then he stormed out of the room. Chapter 24. Oh, you wanted to breathe? That'll be an extra 3 gold. Hearthstone's room? More like Hearthstone's isolation chamber. After cleaning up the spill, we insisted on helping, Inga led us up a wide staircase to the second floor, down a hall bedecked with lush tapestries and more artifact niches, to a simple metal door. She opened it with a big old-fashioned key, though doing so made her wince as if the door was hot.
Apologies, she told us. The house's locks are all made of iron. They're uncomfortable for sprites like me.
Judging from the clammy look on her face, I think she meant torturous. I guess Mr. Alderman didn't want Inga unlocking too many doors, or maybe he just didn't care if she suffered. Inside, the room was almost as large as my suite in Valhalla, but whereas my suite was designed to be everything I could want, this place was designed to be nothing Hearthstone would want. Unlike every other part of the house I'd seen, there were no windows. Rows of fluorescent lights glowed harshly overhead, providing all the ambience of a discount furniture store. On the floor in one corner lay a twin mattress covered in white sheets. No blanket, no comforter, no pillows. To the left, a doorway led to what I assumed was the bathroom. To the right, a closet stood open, revealing exactly one set of clothes. A white suit roughly Hearth size, but otherwise an exact match for the suit in the portrait of Anderon downstairs. Mounted on the walls, classroom-sized whiteboards displayed to-do lists written in neat block letters. Some lists were in black. Your own laundry, twice weekly, equals +2 gold. Sweep the floors, both levels, equals +2 gold. Worthy tasks equals +5 gold. Others were in red. Each meal equals -3 gold. 1 hour of free time equals -3 gold. Embarrassing failures equals -10 gold. I counted maybe a dozen lists like this, along with hundreds of motivational statements like, never forget your responsibility, strive to be worthy, normalcy is the key to success. I felt as if I were surrounded by towering adults all wagging their fingers at me, heaping shame, making me smaller and smaller. And I'd only been here for a minute. I couldn't imagine living here.
Even the Ten Commandments whiteboards weren't the strangest thing. Stretched across the floor was the furry blue hide of a large animal. Its head had been removed, but its four paws still had the claws attached. Curved ivory barbs that would have made perfect fishing hooks for catching great white sharks. Strewn across the rug were gold coins, maybe 200 or 300 of them, glittering like islands in a sea of thick blue fur. Hearthstone set Blitzen down gently at the foot of the mattress. He scanned the whiteboards, his face a mask of anxiety, as if looking for his name on a list of exam scores. Hearth? I was so shocked by the room, I couldn't form a coherent question like, why? Or, may I please kick your father's teeth in? He made one of the first signs he'd ever taught me, back on the streets when he was teaching me how to stay out of trouble with the police. He crossed two fingers and ran them down his opposite palm like he was writing a ticket. Rules. It took a moment for my hands to remember how to sign. Your parents made these for you? Rules, he repeated. His face gave away little. I started to wonder if earlier in his life Hearthstone had smiled more, cried more, shown any emotion more. Maybe he'd learned to be so careful with his expressions as a defense. But why the prices? I asked. It's like a menu. I stared at the gold coins glittering on the fur rug. Wait, the coins were your allowance? Or your payment? Why throw them on the rug? Inga stood quietly in the doorway, her face lowered. It's the hide of the beast, she said, also signing the words. The one that killed his brother. My mouth tasted like rust. Andoron? Inga nodded. She glanced behind her, probably worried that the master would appear out of nowhere. It happened when Andoron was 7 and Hearthstone was 8. As she spoke, she signed almost as fluently as Hearth, like she'd been practicing for years. They were playing in the woods behind the house. There's an old well. She hesitated, looking at Hearthstone for permission to say more. Hearthstone shuddered. Andoron loved the well, he signed. He thought it granted wishes, but there was a bad spirit. He made a strange combination of signs, three fingers at the mouth, a W for water, then pointing down, the symbol for a well, then a V over one eye, the sign for taking a pee. We use that one a lot on the streets, too. Together, it looked like he was naming this bad spirit, Peas in the Well. I frowned at Inga. Did he just say... Yes, she confirmed. That is the spirit's name. In the old language, it is called Brunmigi. It came out of the well and attacked Andoron in the form of... that. A large bluish creature, a mixture of bear and wolf. Always with the blue wolves, I hated them. It killed Andoron, I summed up. In the fluorescent light, Hearthstone's face looked as petrified as Blitzen's. I was playing with some stones, he signed. My back was turned. I didn't hear. I couldn't. He grasped at empty air. It wasn't your fault, Hearth, Inga said. She looked so young with her clear blue eyes, her slightly pudgy rosy cheeks, her blonde hair curling around the edges of her bonnet, but she spoke as if she'd seen the attack firsthand. Were you there? I asked. She blushed even more. Not exactly. I was just a little girl, but my mother worked as Mr. Alderman's servant. I remember Hearthstone running into the house crying, signing for help. He and Mr. Alderman rushed out again, and then later, Mr. Alderman came back carrying Master Andoron's body. Her cowtail flicked, brushing the door jamb. Mr. Alderman killed the Brunmigi, but he made Hearthstone skin the creature all by himself. Hearthstone wasn't allowed back inside until the job was done. Once the hide was cured and made into a rug, they put it in here. Gods! I paced the room. I tried to wipe some of the words off a whiteboard, but they were written in permanent marker. Of course they were. And the coins? I asked. The menu items? My voice came out harsher than I'd intended. Inga flinched. Hearthstone's Wehrguild, she said. The blood debt for his brother's death. Cover the rug, Hearthstone signed mechanically, as if quoting something he'd heard a million times. Earn gold coins until not a single hair can be seen. Then I have paid. I looked at the list of prices, the pluses and minuses of Hearthstone's guilt ledger. I stared at the sprinkling of coins lost in an expanse of blue fur. I imagined 8-year-old Hearthstone trying to earn enough money to cover even the smallest portion of this huge rug. I shivered, but I couldn't shake off my anger. Hearth, I thought your parents beat you or something. This is worse.
Inga wrung her hands. Oh, no, sir. Beatings are only for the house staff. But you are right. Mr. Hearthstone's punishment has been much more difficult.
Beatings. Inga mentioned them as if they were unfortunate facts of life, like burned cookies or stopped-up sinks. I'm going to tear this place down, I decided. I'm going to throw your father... Hearthstone locked eyes with me. My anger backwashed in my throat. This wasn't my call. This wasn't my history. Still... Hearth, we can't play his sick little game, I said. He wants you to complete this were-guild before he helps us? That's impossible. Sam's supposed to marry a giant in 4 days. Can't we just take the stone? Travel to another world before Alderman realizes? Hearth shook his head. Stone must be a gift. Only works if given freely. And there are guards, Inga added. Security spirits that... you don't want to meet. I'd expected all of the above, but that didn't stop me from cursing until Inga's ears blushed. What about rune magic? I asked. Can you summon enough gold to cover the fur? Were-guild cannot be cheated, Hearth signed. Gold must be earned or won by some great effort. That'll take years.
Perhaps not, Inga murmured, as if talking to the blue rug. There is a way.
Hearth turned to her. How? Inga clasped her hands in agitation. I wasn't sure if she was aware that she was making a sign for marriage.
I don't mean to speak out of turn, but there is the careful one.
Hearth threw up his hands in the universal gesture for, are you kidding me? He signed, careful one is a legend.
No, Inga said. I know where he is.
Hearth stared at her in dismay. Even if... no, too dangerous. Everyone who tries to rob him ends up dead.
Not everyone, Inga said. It would be dangerous, but you could do it, Hearth. I know you could.
Hold up, I said. Who's the careful one? What are you talking about?
There is a dwarf, Inga said. The only dwarf in Alfheim except for...
She nodded toward our petrified friend.
The careful one has a hoard of gold large enough to cover this rug. I could tell you how to find him, if you don't mind a fairly high chance that you'll die.
Chapter 25. Hearthstone? More like heartthrob, am I right? You shouldn't make a comment about imminent death and then say, good night, we'll talk about it tomorrow. But Inga insisted we shouldn't go after the dwarf until the morning. She pointed out that we needed rest. She brought us extra clothes, food and drink, and a couple of pillows. Then she scurried off, maybe to clean up spills or dust artifact niches or pay Mr. Alderman 5 gold for the privilege of being his servant. Hearth didn't want to talk about the killer dwarf Careful One or his gold. He didn't want to be consoled about his dead mother or his living father. After a quick, gloomy meal, he signed, need sleep, and promptly collapsed on his mattress. Just out of spite, I decided to sleep on the rug. Sure, it was creepy, but how often do you get to recline on 100% genuine peas-in-the-well fur? Hearthstone had told me that the sun never set in Alfheim. It just sort of dipped to the horizon and came back up again, like in summer in the Arctic. I'd wondered if I'd have trouble sleeping when there was no night. But I needn't have worried. Here in Hearthstone's windowless room, one flick of the light switch left me in total darkness. I'd had a long day, what, with fighting democratic zombies and then getting dropped out of an airplane into the wealthy suburbs of Elitistheim. The evil creature's fur was surprisingly warm and comfortable. Before I knew it, I had drifted off into not-so-peaceful slumber. Seriously, I don't know if there's a Norse god of dreams, but if there is, I'm going to find his house and hack apart his sleep number mattress with a battle axe. I got treated to a flurry of disturbing images, none of which made much sense. I saw my Uncle Randolph's ship listing in the storm, heard his daughters screaming from inside the wheelhouse. Sam and Amir, who had no business being there, clung to opposite sides of the deck, trying to reach each other's hands until a wave crashed over them and swept them out to sea. The dream shifted. I saw Alex Fierro in her suite in Valhalla, throwing ceramic pots across the atrium. Loki stood in her bedroom, casually adjusting his paisley bow tie in the mirror as pots passed through him and smashed against the wall.
"It's such a simple request, Alex," he said. "The alternative will be unpleasant. Do you think because you're dead you have nothing left to lose? You are very wrong."
"Get out!" Alex screamed. Loki turned, but he was no longer a he. The god had changed into a young woman with long red hair and dazzling eyes, an emerald green evening gown accentuating her figure.
"Temper, temper, love," she purred. "Remember where you come from."
The words reverberated, shaking the scene apart. I found myself in a cavern of bubbling sulfuric pools and thick stalagmites. The god Loki, wearing only a loincloth, lay lashed to three rock columns, his arms spread wide, his legs bound together, his ankles and wrists tied with glistening dark cords of calcified guts. Coiled around a stalactite above his head was a massive green serpent, jaws open, fangs dripping venom into the god's eyes. But instead of screaming, Loki was laughing as his face burned.
"Soon enough, Magnus," he called. "Don't forget your wedding invitation."
A different scene, a mountainside in Jotunheim in the middle of a blizzard. At the summit stood the god Thor, his red beard and shaggy hair flecked with ice, his eyes blazing. In his thick fur cloak, with his hide clothes dusted with snow, he looked like the abominable ginger snowman. Coming up the slope to kill him were 1,000 giants, an army of muscle-bound gargantuans in armor fashioned from slabs of stone, their spears the size of redwood trees. With his gauntlets, Thor raised his hammer, the mighty Mjolnir. Its head was a slab of iron shaped roughly like a flattened circus tent, blunt on both ends and pointed in the middle. Runic designs swirled across the metal. In the god's double-fisted grip, Mjolnir's handle looked so stubby it was almost comical, like he was a child raising a weapon much too heavy for him. The army of giants laughed and jeered. Then Thor brought down the hammer. At his feet, the side of the mountain exploded. Giants went flying in a million-ton maelstrom of rock and snow, lightning crackling through their ranks, hungry tendrils of energy burning them to ashes. The chaos subsided. Thor glowered down at the 1,000 dead enemies now littering the slopes. Then he looked directly at me.
"You think I can do that with a staff, Magnus Chase?" he bellowed. "Hurry up with that hammer!"
Then, being Thor, he lifted his right leg and farted a thunderclap. The next morning, Hearthstone shook me awake. I felt like I'd been bench-pressing Mjolnir all night, but I managed to stumble into the shower, then dress myself in elfish linen and denim. I had to roll up the sleeves and cuffs about 16 times to make them fit. I wasn't sure about leaving Blitzen behind, but Hearthstone decided that our friend would be safer here than where we were going. We set him on the mattress and tucked him in. Then the two of us crept out of the house, thankfully without encountering Mr. Alderman. Inga had agreed to meet us at the back edge of the estate. We found her waiting where the well-kept lawn met a gnarled line of trees and undergrowth. The sun was on the rise again, turning the sky blood orange. Even with my sunglasses on, my eyeballs were screaming in pain. Stupid, beautiful sunrise and stupid elf world. "I don't have long," Inga fretted. "I bought a 10-minute break from the master." That made me angry all over again. I wanted to ask how much it would cost to buy 10 minutes of stomping Mr. Alderman with cleats, but I figured I shouldn't waste Inga's valuable time. She pointed to the woods.
"Anvari's lair is in the river. Follow the current downstream to the waterfall. He dwells in the pool at its base."
"Anvari?" I asked. She nodded uneasily.
"That is his name, the Careful One, in the old language."
"And this dwarf lives underwater?"
"In the shape of a fish," said Inga.
"Oh, naturally." Hearthstone signed to Inga. "How do you know this?"
"I... well, Master Hearthstone, Hulders still have some nature magic. We're not supposed to use it, but I sensed the dwarf the last time I was in the woods. Mr. Alderman only tolerates this patch of wilderness on his property because, you know, Hulder need a forest nearby to survive, and he can always hire more help in there."
She said hire. I heard catch. The 10-minute cleat-stomping session was sounding better and better. "So this dwarf," I said, "what's he doing in Alfheim? Doesn't the sunlight turn him to stone?" Inga's cowtail flicked.
"According to the rumors I've heard, Anvari is over 1,000 years old. He has powerful magic. The sunlight barely affects him. Also, he stays in the darkest depths of the pool. I suppose he thought Alfheim was a safe place to hide. His gold has been stolen before by dwarves, humans, even gods. But who would look for a dwarf and his treasure here?"
"Thank you, Inga," Hearth signed.
The Hulder blushed. "Just be careful, Master Hearth. Anvari is tricky. His treasure is sure to be hidden and protected by all sorts of enchantments. I'm sorry I can only tell you where to find him, not how to defeat him."
Hearthstone gave Inga a hug. I was afraid the poor girl's bonnet might pop off like a bottle cap.
Please, good luck, she dashed off.
I turned to Hearthstone.
Has she been in love with you since you were kids?
Hearth pointed at me, then circled his finger at the side of his head.
You're crazy.
Whatever, man, I said. I'm just glad he didn't kiss her. She would have passed out.
Hearthstone gave me an irritated grunt.
Come on. Dwarf to rob.
Chapter 26. We nuke all the fish. I had trekked through the wilderness of Jotunheim. I had lived on the streets of Boston. Somehow, the swath of uncultivated land behind the Alderman Manor seemed even more dangerous. Glancing behind us, I could still see the house's towers peeking above the woods. I could hear traffic from the road. The sun shone down as glaringly cheerful as usual, but under the gnarled trees, the gloom was tenacious. The roots and rocks seemed determined to trip me. In the upper branches, birds and squirrels gave me the stink eye. It was as if this little patch of nature were trying doubly hard to stay wild in order to avoid getting turned into a tea garden. If I even see you bringing a croquet set up in here, the trees seemed to say, I will make you eat the mallets. I appreciated the attitude, but it made our stroll a little nerve-wracking. Hearthstone seemed to know where he was going. The thought of Anderon and him playing in these woods as boys gave me new respect for their courage. After picking our way through a few acres of thorn bushes, we emerged in a small clearing with a cairn of stones in the center. What is that? I asked. Hearthstone's expression was tight and painful, as if he were still forging through the briar. He signed, The Well. The melancholy of the place seeped into my pores. This was the spot where his brother had died. Mr. Alderman must have filled in the well, or maybe he had forced Hearthstone to do it after he'd finished skinning the evil creature. The act had probably earned Hearth a couple of gold coins. I circled my fist over my chest, the sign for, I'm sorry. Hearth stared at me as if the sentiment did not compute. He knelt next to the cairn and picked up a small flat stone from the top. Engraved on it in dark red was a rune. Othala, inheritance. The same symbol Randolph's little girl Emma had been clutching in my dream. Seeing it in real life, I felt seasick all over again. My face burned with the memory of Randolph's scar. I recalled what Loki had said in the White's tomb. Blood is a powerful thing. I can always find you through him. For a second, I wondered if Loki had somehow put the rune here as a message for me, but Hearthstone didn't seem surprised to find it. I knelt next to him and signed, Why is that here? Hearthstone pointed to himself. He set the stone carefully back on top of the pile. Means home, he signed. Or what is important. Inheritance? He considered for a moment, then nodded. I put it here when I left years ago. This rune I will not use. It belongs with him. I stared at the pile of rocks. Were some of these the same ones that 8-year-old Hearthstone had been playing with when the monster attacked his brother? This place was more than a memorial for Anderon. Part of Hearthstone had died here, too. I was no magician, but it seemed wrong for a set of runestones to be missing one symbol. How could you master a language, especially the language of the universe, without all the letters? I wanted to encourage Hearth to take back the rune. Surely Anderon would want that. Hearth had a new family now. He was a great sorcerer. His cup of life had been refilled. But Hearthstone avoided my eyes. It's not easy to heed someone when you're deaf. You simply don't look at them. He rose and walked on, gesturing for me to follow. A few minutes later, we found the river. It wasn't impressive, just a swampy creek like the one that meandered through the Fenway Greenbelt. Clouds of mosquitoes hovered over marsh grass. The ground was like warm bread pudding. We followed the current downstream through thick patches of bramble and bog up to our knees. The 1,000-year-old dwarf Anvari had picked a lovely place to retire. After last night's dreams, my nerves were raw. I kept thinking about Loki bound in his cave, and his appearance in Alex Fierro's suite. It's such a simple request. If that had actually happened, what did Loki want? I remembered the assassin, the goat killer who liked to possess flight instructors. He told me to bring Alex to Jotunheim.
She is now your only hope for success.
That did not bode well. 3 days from now, the giant Thrym expected a wedding. He would want his bride, as well as a bride price of the Skofnung sword and stone. In exchange, maybe, we would get back Thor's hammer and prevent hordes of Jotunheim from invading Boston. I thought about the 1,000 giants I'd seen in my dream marching into battle to challenge Thor. I wasn't anxious to face such a force, not without a big hammer that could explode mountains and fry invading armies into sizzly bits. I guessed what Hearth and I were doing now made sense.
trudging through Alfheim, trying to retrieve gold from some old dwarf so we can get the Skofnung stone and heal Blitz. Still, I felt as if Loki was intentionally keeping us sidetracked, not giving us time to think. He was like a point guard waving his hands in our faces, distracting us from shooting for the net. There was more to this wedding deal than getting Thor's hammer back. Loki had a plan within a plan. He'd recruited my Uncle Randolph for some reason. If only I could find a moment to gather my thoughts without being pulled from one life-threatening problem to another. Yeah, right. You've just described your entire life and afterlife, Magnus. I tried to tell myself everything would be fine. Unfortunately, my esophagus didn't believe me. It kept yo-yoing up and down from my chest to my teeth. The first waterfall we found was a gentle trickle over a mossy ledge. Open meadows stretched out on either bank. The water wasn't deep enough for a fish to hide in. The meadows were too flat to conceal effective traps, like poison spikes, landmines, or tripwires that launched dynamite or rabid rodents from catapults. No self-respecting dwarf would have hidden his treasure here. We kept walking. The second waterfall had potential. The terrain was rockier, with lots of slippery moss and treacherous crevices between the boulders on either bank. The overhanging trees shaded the water and provided ample potential hiding places for crossbows or guillotine blades. The river itself cascaded down a natural stairwell of rock before tumbling 10 feet into a pond the diameter of a trampoline. With all the churning froth and ripples, I couldn't see below the surface, but judging from the dark blue water, it must have been deep. "There could be anything down there," I told Hearth. "How do we do this?" Hearthstone gestured toward my pendant. "Be ready." Okay. I pulled off my runestone and summoned Jack.
"Hey, guys," he said.
"Whoa, we're in Alfheim. Did you bring sunglasses for me?"
"Jack, you don't have eyes," I reminded him.
"Yeah, but still, I look great in sunglasses. What are we doing?" I told him the basics while Hearthstone rummaged through his bag of runestones, trying to decide which flavor of magic to use on a dwarf slash fish.
"Andvari?" Jack said.
"Oh, I've heard of that guy. You can steal his gold, but don't kill him. That would be really bad luck."
"Meaning what, exactly?"
Swords cannot shrug, but Jack tilted from side to side, which was his closest equivalent.
"I don't know what would happen. I just know it's right up there on the things you don't do list, along with breaking mirrors, crossing paths with Freya's cats, and trying to kiss Frigg under the mistletoe. Boy, I made that mistake once."
I had the horrible feeling Jack was about to tell me the story. Then Hearthstone raised a runestone over his head. I just had time to recognize the symbol. Thurisats, the rune of Thor. Hearthstone slammed it into the pond. Kablam! Water vapor coated my sunglasses. The atmosphere turned to pure steam and ozone so fast my sinuses inflated like car airbags. I wiped off my lenses. Where the pond had been, a huge muddy pit went down 30 feet. At the bottom, dozens of surprised fish flailed around, their gills flapping.
"Whoa," I said. "Where did the water fall?"
I looked up. The river arched over our heads like a liquid rainbow, bypassing the pond and crashing into the riverbed downstream.
"Hearth, how the heck—"
He turned to me, and I took a nervous step back. His eyes blazed with anger. His expression was scarier and even less Hearth-like than when he'd urrutzed himself into Ox-Elf.
Just saying, man," I raised my hands. "You nuked about 50 innocent fish."
"One of them is a dwarf," he signed. He jumped into the pit, his boots sinking into the mud. He waded around, pulling out his feet with deep sucking noises, examining each fish. Above me, the river continued to arc through mid-air, roaring and glittering in the sunlight.
"Jack," I said, "what does the Thurisats rune do?" "It's the rune of Thor, senor."
"Hey, Thor, senor, that rhymes."
"Yeah, great, but why did the pond go boom? Why is Hearthstone acting so weird?"
"Oh, because Thurisats is the rune of destructive force, like Thor, blowing stuff up. Also, when you invoke it, you can get a little Thor-like." Thor-like, just what I needed. Now I really didn't want to jump into that hole. If Hearthstone started farting like the Thunder God, the air down there was going to get toxic real fast. On the other hand, I couldn't leave those fish at the mercy of an angry elf. Sure, they were just fish, but I didn't like the idea of so many dying so we could weed out one disguised dwarf. Life was life. I guess it was a Frey thing. I also figured Hearthstone might feel bad about it once he shook off the influence of Thurisats.
"Jack, stay here," I said. "Keep watch."
"Which would be easier and cooler with sunglasses," Jack complained. I ignored him and leaped in. At least Hearth didn't try to kill me when I dropped down next to him. I looked around but saw no sign of treasure. No X's marking the spot. No trapdoors. Just a bunch of gasping fish. "How do we find Anvari?" I signed. "The other fish need water to breathe." "We wait," Hearth signed. "Dwarf will suffocate too unless he changes form." I didn't like that answer. I crouched and rested my hands on the mud, sending out the power of Frey through the slime and the muck. I know that sounds weird, but I figured if I could heal with a touch, intuiting everything that was wrong inside someone's body, maybe I could extend my perception a little more, the same way you might squint to see farther, and sense all the different life forms around me. It worked, more or less. My mind touched the cold, panicked consciousness of a trout flopping a few inches away. I located an eel that had burrowed into the mud and was seriously considering biting Hearthstone in the foot. I convinced him not to. I touched the tiny minds of guppies whose entire thought process was, "Eek, eek, eek!" Then I sensed something different. A grouper whose thoughts were racing a little too fast, like he was calculating escape plans. I snatched him up with my inherited reflexes. The grouper yelled, "Gack!" "Anvari, I presume? Nice to meet you." "Let me go!" wailed the fish. "My treasure is not in this pond! Actually, I don't have a treasure! Forget I said that!" "Hearth, how about we get out of here?" I suggested. "Let the pond fill up again." The fire suddenly went out of Hearthstone's eyes. He staggered. From above, Jack yelled, Magnus? You might want to hurry." The rune magic was fading. The arc of water started to dissolve, breaking into droplets. Keeping one hand tight on my captive grouper, I wrapped my other arm around Hearthstone's waist and leaped straight up with all my strength. "Kids, do not try this at home. I'm a trained Inherii who died a painful death, went to Valhalla, and now spends most of his time arguing with a sword. I'm a qualified professional who can jump out of 30-foot-deep muddy holes. You, I hope, are not." I landed on the riverbank just as the waterfall collapsed back into the pond, granting all the little fishies a very wet miracle and a story to tell their grandchildren. The grouper tried to wriggle free. "Let me go, you scoundrel!" "Counterproposal," I said. "Anvari, this is my friend Jack, the Sword of Summer. He can cut through almost anything. He sings pop songs like a demented angel. He can also fillet a fish faster than you would believe. I'm about to ask Jack to do all of those things at once. Or you can turn into your normal form, slow and easy, and we can have a chat." In two blinks, instead of holding a fish, my hand was wrapped around the throat of the oldest, slimiest dwarf I'd ever seen. He was so disgusting that the fact I didn't let go should have proven my bravery and got me into Valhalla all over again. "Congratulations," the dwarf croaked. "You got me. And now you're gonna get a tragic demise." Chapter 27. "Let me go immediately, or I will make you a billionaire." "Ooh, a demise." Normally I'm not threatened with a demise. Most folks in the Nine Worlds don't use fancy words like that. They just say, "I'ma kill you!" Or they let their chainmail-wrapped fists do the talking. I was so impressed with Anvari's vocabulary, I squeezed his throat tighter. "Ack!" The dwarf thrashed and wriggled. He was slippery, but not heavy. Even by dwarf standards, the dude was tiny. He wore a fish-skin tunic and underwear that was basically a moss diaper. Slime coated his limbs. His stubby arms hammered away at me, but it didn't feel any worse than getting hit with Nerf bats. And his face... well, you know how your thumb looks after it's been under a wet bandage too long? All wrinkly and discolored and gross? Imagine that as a face, with some scraggly white whiskers and mold-green eyes, and you've got Anvari. "Where's the gold?" I demanded. "Don't make me unleash my sword's playlist." Anvari writhed even more. "You fools don't want my gold! Don't you know what happens to people who take it?" "They get rich," I guessed. "No! Well, yes. But after that, they die. Or, at least they want to die. They always suffer, and so does everyone around them." He wiggled his slimy fingers like, "Woo, woo, threatening." Hearthstone was listing slightly to port, but he managed to stay on his feet. He signed, "One person stole gold. No consequences." Then he made my least favorite name sign. Index finger and thumb pinched together at the side of his head. A combination of the letters L and the sign for devil, which fit our friend Loki just fine. "Loki took your gold once," I interpreted, "and he didn't die or suffer." "Well, yeah, but that's Loki," Anvari said. "Everybody else who got the gold after him, they went crazy. They had horrible lives. Left a trail of dead bodies. Is that what you want?"
You want to be like Fafnir? Sigurd? The Powerball lottery winners?
The who?
Oh, come on, you've heard the stories. Every time I lose my ring, it bounces around the nine worlds for a while. Some schmuck gets a hold of it. They win the lottery and make millions. But they always end up broke, divorced, sick, unhappy, and or dead. Is that what you want?
Harth signed, magic ring, yes. That's the secret of his wealth. We need that.
You mentioned a ring, I said.
Advari went still.
Did I?
Nope. Must have misspoken. No ring.
Jack, I said, how do his feet look to you?